Hello, everybody. This is On Location, Coastside Edition with Sophia Lane. And today, I have the pleasure of being here with my dear friend, Hector Camacho.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Hector. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day here on the
coast. It is. We kind of like it like this. It's like a little foggy, a little sunny.
It's got a little natural protection built in.
It does. It does. Yeah. It's nice. It's nice. Where are you from? Where do you live?
So I am not unfamiliar with the fog because I live in the Westboro neighborhood of South City.
Nice.
So if you just keep heading due north, you're going to hit my turf and the fog's going to come with us.
Yes. Yes. I'm glad that you're comfortable out here. We've known each other for a while.
A while.
Through our work together in education and public policy and advocacy. But many of our listeners might not know you and might not know, you know, your thoughts around the coastside and your thoughts around San Mateo County and all that.
Yeah.
Why don't you share it with us a little bit?
Absolutely. And can I just start by saying thanks for we're starting by walking by schools and hearing the voices of children is just all gives you all the feels.
Yep. Because, we're here by Cunha Intermediate, as you know.
That's right. And so hearing students is really good fuel for the story. So I'd love to share something about me. It took me a long time to say that I am from the Bay. I'm not originally born here in this area, but I came here very young. So I did all K through 12 schools, public schools in San Bruno and in South City my whole life. And, you know, working throughout this county, I started working before you probably were supposed to start working. So following folks around through nonprofit work, mostly in North County and then a little bit more in the South County. And really, I think just still holds true for a lot of folks today. The coastside was that special place that you came to.
Yep.
You came to for the beaches, you came to for the food, for the community, and that just slowing down a little bit. So,
yeah, we like that here. It's ever so slightly slower than it is over the hill,
yeah,
as we say.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that also teaches you something if you're not from the coastside, is always enter this place as a very welcome visitor, but you're a visitor and be respectful to the place that this is, that what makes this a community. So I always keep that in my mind when I'm here. It's just like, they are doing a lovely job of welcoming us, so let's make sure they want to continue welcoming us.
Yeah, let's keep it chill.
Exactly.
Right? Let's keep it chill. Coastside chill.
Yeah. So grew up in this area, went to CSM after high school because for me, I knew I wanted to teach. I didn't really know how to get there. My parents didn't really know how to do school themselves, so graduating from high school was a thing for me, and I just didn't know how to get to teaching. So I went to CSM for a couple of years and transferred, finally finished my degree, then didn't know how to become a teacher. So It took me a little bit longer before I finally got my credential. Taught in Sequoia School District, taught in South City School District, was up at the Middle College, and then I joined the Board of Ed for the county. So that was a change, and I think that's how we crossed paths.
Yep.
And education's just been in my blood, and I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah.
We're on year 26 in public education.
That's amazing.
So it's been an exciting experience being in the county and in part of the education system here.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. So I'm so pleased that you were able to take a small break from your day-to-day. Oh, wait, we hear the kids over here. I think they must be in PE or something.
It looks like PE, and it always is a good sound to keep you going.
Yeah, those cute little voices.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. I'm so grateful that you were able to come over here. Tell us a little bit about normally when I can't rip you away from your usual day-to-day. What does your day-to-day look like these days?
Well, this is part of it. So I'm at the County Office of Education, and a lot of folks maybe have heard of the county office but don't really know what we do. Our job really is to support school districts in the amazing work that they're doing and provide additional resources so that they can, you know, really become the best educators that they want to be and can be, and really provide the support that all of our students need. So we do a lot of that work. And the county office is also kind of the accountability piece of making sure that we really are making progress for all of our students. So it's really towing that line. My role as executive director of equity, social justice, and inclusion is really to think about how we're looking at access and opportunity across every school in this county. I know that there are a lot of thoughts around those particular words, equity, social justice, and inclusion. But for me, I don't know that it's anything that I would ever argue with, because I want everyone to have access to the top quality education I know our county can provide. I want every student to have opportunities beyond middle school, beyond high school, beyond whatever they choose after they exit our system. I want them to have those options, because without options, we know the trajectories of them, of their lives, can be pretty tough.
Yeah. I love what you're saying, Hector, about equity and access, because I think that historically our education system has been fairly one size fits all.
Yeah.
But if you think, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And it's been really encouraging over the last several years to see a focus on equity. And so first of all, a lot of people use that word.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, what is equity?
Well, I like to use this idea of how we think about schools traditionally. It is always been that a student shows up at school and that child has to figure out, oh, how do I do school? And they have to kind of figure out this system and they have to navigate it. The idea of equity is, what if instead a child shows up and the school is molding itself around that child, as opposed to the other way around? It's providing every child with the access they need to be able to succeed in school and beyond. That's what equity is really about. Every student having an opportunity to succeed.
Right. And by having kind of that not a custom for, fit for everybody, because obviously that's not entirely, that has its challenges, but to have some kind of flexibility around what students need at different points in time and being able to adapt to that.
Yeah, because if we think about what the word equality means, it's giving every child the same, which in theory sounds like a good idea. But what if you're talking about giving every child the exact same book, right? What if you're giving them all the exact same size gym shorts? Like, it's not going to work for every child. And that's really simplifying it. But you do want to alter the way in which students can engage with their schools. And that's what equity is about, is how are we creating the conditions where a student has access to the curriculum through, whether it be a program or a school site itself that's made differently or in an alternative format.
Right. And we paused here because this is a very special place here to me, for having been a board member here at Cabrillo Unified. We're one of my favorite places, Pilarcitos High School. They all know that.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a love across the board, but I think there's some special things happening here in terms of alternative education. So, what are your observations and your thoughts, not here specifically, but just in general, about what you've seen countywide about, how different kinds of formats like, independent study and access to college coursework really can help students at, with all different kinds of features, right? So some of those that are struggling, that are, at risk of falling behind, but also those that are maybe have just different ways of learning and maybe need a different kind of challenge and they get in a conventional setting.
One of the neat things about growing up in this area and working in this area is you get to experience all kinds of different magical places in education. And so one of my earliest jobs in education was working at a continuation school in the county, which is alternative education. It's looking at, maybe these students aren't being served in a huge traditional public comprehensive high school. What if we put them in a place that's a little bit smaller, the relationships are a little bit closer, and the whole staff is working together to really wrap their arms around every child? Mm-hmm. What if we did that model? And I think that's what Pilarcitos does. I think that's what the school that I was working at does. And saying, what are the needs of these students here in front of us? That's what alternative education can do. And in some cases, it's even for, as you said, providing access to college, even at the high school level. And so working at the middle college was something that I also did. And I saw what those small learning environments and providing access to college earlier on can do. When you start to remove the barriers to access, children will flourish. All children will flourish. And so we just need to create the conditions in our schools for them to flourish.
Yes.
And that's what alternative education is about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One, I think, really interesting thing about the work that you do and the work that you oversaw when you were a board member at the San Mateo County, with the San Mateo County Board of Education, is the breadth of age groups that you're looking at, right? Everything from TK to 12th grade, and in some cases adult schools as well as like unified school districts like this one here in Half Moon Bay has. Thinking about the other end of the spectrum, let's walk over. We're approaching here one of the elementary schools nearby, Hatch Elementary, and co-located with Hatch Elementary is a fairly new early education center here as well, which, as you know, supports a lot of English learners in our community, which is probably almost half of the students here in the coastside of San Mateo County.
Yeah. So it makes me think about what do we know about education overall? Turns out we actually know a lot. And this is the really interesting thing about it, is that this is the one of the fields where we actually know a lot of the answers, and it's just a matter of, are we actually doing those things? And early childhood education and the early years, we know that if we invest in children at this age and if we provide them with lots of opportunities to engage with reading and with math and with STEM, that they're going to become incredible students in the long term. I don't know that our political will has gotten us to the place in which we invest at the level that we really should be. So when I see a co-location of an elementary school and an early childhood ed center, that makes all kinds of sense, because now kids are getting used to being in a learning environment for their age, right? So I'm not saying that every four-year-old needs to come in and sit at a desk for 8 hours. That's not what it's about. But every four-year-old can have that social engagement in a place where there is a caring adult or two that's helping them learn what's appropriate for their age level. And it gets them accustomed to this idea of learning in a social environment. There's just so many things that happen when you bring kids together, especially kids of mixed abilities, of mixed language status, of mixed immigration status, all these things. When you bring them together, kids receive people, especially if you're 3-4 years old, you receive that person as they are in front of you. And so if we're exposing them to that kind of thing at an earlier age, what does that mean for our society later on?
Yeah.
It means that they approach everyone with, "Hi, my name is Hector. I want to be your friend."
Yeah.
And if we started that earlier on, it addresses so many other things. Because you're right, we have a great diversity of students in this county, in this community in particular. And what are we doing to highlight that? And what are we doing to celebrate that and really create it as an opportunity for learning?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm glad that you mentioned about the different abilities as well, because I know in a lot of school districts, you know, including this one of the big paradigm shifts was actually integrating students with special educational needs into the general classroom early on and having additional supports in order to be able to do that. But rather than creating these different pathways from kids by the time, you know, from the time they're 2 or 3 years old, is creating a culture among our youngest learners where they're all together, right?
Yeah.
They're all not only included, like, you know, student A gets to be included in student B's classroom, but that the classroom is designed for students A and B.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's, you know, I know with a lot of the work that you're doing, a lot of that principle of not only inclusion, whatever, you know, the names of the day are, but really creating a sense of belonging.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's a big part of the magic of the work that you do.
Yeah. And one of the other pieces on that early education front is when we get them in the classrooms, we can also start to really look at how they're developing in their own literacy and numeracy skills as well. So this new universal screener about how we're finding areas that we can lean into earlier on is really going to help, because the other thing that we've created on the other end of not investing in early childhood ed is we start to mix the idea of how a student behaves with how they're able to achieve. And that's a huge problem right here, right?
Yes.
So maybe if we're doing the assessment a little bit earlier on to say, hey, this student needs a little bit additional support in literacy when they're 4 or when they're 6.
Right.
You can head off a lot of the things that turn into behavior, what we call behavior issues or problems, that really have nothing to do with ability. They have to do with access. And we're learning more that when we engage at the early years, we can set up students for success much earlier on right now. So we know that that indicator of whether you're reading at grade level by 3rd grade, that's going to tell us a lot about how successful you will be for the rest of your schooling. So let's take that knowledge and do something with it.
And do something with it early on before, right? Because oftentimes you'll see data, and I've seen data like this before too, where you know kids are coming in at different levels and different competencies. And then without kinds of supports, you know, you see that change a lot. And I know we've seen some really promising results with the Big Lift program that the County Office of Ed has coordinated for the past several years. And the school district here in Half Moon Bay has been part of that and seen some really promising results there too. And I appreciate what you said too about the political aspects of the work that you do, the work that people do in schools throughout not only Half Moon Bay and San Mateo County, but throughout California and our country, is how we adapt that, adapt what we do within that political environment. So one example I think I shared with you previously is in the work that was done here locally with our early education center. There was a building that had to be added, a classroom building about 1,000 square feet or so, because there was a wait list, which was fantastic. You know, with mostly students who were had English as their second language, and were very interested in joining this, you know, early ed programs and after school programs. So, a building was put on campus, on the edge of a field, probably about several acres of a green field, and you know, there were some community pushback on that, because concerns about losing the field, which, you know, was probably less than 0.01% of the space. And I think sometimes it's hard for people to see that value when it's not touching them personally, right? So how do you think, how do you feel about those kinds of situations?
Well, I mean, I always like to see that as an opportunity. I think that there's a great opportunity to help the community understand how everyone benefits from strong schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a time, not to get too nostalgic, but there was a time when the community really, really centered on the school. The schoolhouse was the center of the community, and we would do anything for these schools because we had great faith in children. Maybe we lost a little bit of that over time, of understanding that, like, we all benefit when kids are thriving, when kids have access to the things they need. And sometimes that need is space.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we create that space, we have to, as educators, create a better through line to understand that, like, hey, we're investing in this right here because that's going to make our community stronger.
Right.
Parents are going to have a place for their children to really be during the day while they're out working, and they're not going to have to worry about childcare. Not that schools are childcare facilities, but there are places of learning. And so how do we create conditions for even the adults to thrive? And let's say, you know, I think about even my own mom, who's retired, and how does she benefit from good schools? She benefits from good schools because we create safe walking conditions in her neighborhood because there are more children present. We create places for her to do rec classes after schools close. It's just thinking about schools as another hub of the community and a part of the community, as opposed to an other just because I don't have children in the school system. Because the reality is, whether you have children, don't have children, or have grown children, everyone either has them or knows someone that has them.
Yeah.
And you want all the children in your life to thrive.
Yeah.
Our community benefits from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder if that phenomenon has gotten a little bit more exacerbated over the years, you know, frankly, with technology perhaps contributing to some more, but maybe two things, you know, more bubble formation, if you will, in terms of the social circles that we're all in. Because I can say that when we, you might recall the mass shooting that we had in Half Moon Bay a couple years ago, and how it really pulled the cloak off, if you will, a lot of really, really substandard housing for our farm workers around here, that a lot of people were in shock, right? That people were living in these really deplorable conditions and, you know, by all rights of human dignity, deserved better than that. And it's just too easy in modern day life.
Yeah.
As well as the fact that, like, a lot of students with disabilities or with different language needs or different immigration status historically were left behind. And that historically oftentimes was considered okay.
Yeah.
So it seems like those phenomenon have been factors.
Yeah. Matthew Desmond has a saying that poverty is a choice, right? And so we, the people in the society, make the choices to allow those conditions to exist. And that's something we have to confront. And if I were to even look at it from an education perspective, let's deal with the reality that only 55% of the students in this county here, only 55% are reading at grade level by third grade. That is a choice. That is a choice that we've made, and we've made it through the investments that we make in early childhood education and in children overall. So while there's lots of opportunity for conversation, we have to understand that what's happening is what we've invested in. And so in this state, we still spend more per prisoner than we do per student. And
substantially more, right?
Substantially more.
Like and, probably 2 to 3 times more at least.
And when was the last time we built a public university or another community college or any of these things? These are choices that we're making as residents, as voters, and it's us saying that we're okay with that. But I don't think we are.
Yeah.
I don't think we are. And maybe we can do a better job as a community of connecting those dots to say, hey, I care about children. I care about my community. I will support people in elected office who also care about those things. And so if we really, really circle ourselves around children, we can really make the change that we need.
Right, right. Especially in a state with such... you know, stated progressive values as California, and frankly, in a county with the same stated progressive values, and frankly, in a county that's probably, you know, by all means or by all measures and by all years, one of the wealthiest counties, not only in California, but in the country.
Yeah.
You know, being here on the edge of Silicon Valley. So this idea of equity and there not being enough to share, to help, you know, to invest in all the students for all the different kinds of needs is can sometimes feel a little bit particularly challenging in environments where the resources are there. It's just a matter of the distribution of the resources.
Yeah. And I do want to say, I do think that people care. I do think that people care deeply about children and care about their communities. Maybe they just don't know how to translate that care into action.
Yep.
And on when it comes to students, there are plausible ways. Are you showing up at local school community events? I just saw a flyer for a community production that's put on by the schools. Like, are you showing up? Because we started this conversation with hearing the voices of children.
Yeah.
When you get in a room with children who are excited about whatever they're doing, whether it be learning or performing or any of those things, when you get in that room, your heart is filled and the joy just comes through really easily. So how do we translate that care and that love into action? That's really our task, because everyone has a part in ensuring the success of kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really appreciative that you brought up that topic of access. And I think that this concept of access to academic instruction and curriculum makes a lot of sense. It's probably the first thing that people think about when they think about access in a school environment. But, you know, more broadly, you know, what are the other aspects of learning and education and, you know, just growing up that you think about?
Yeah, so you're right. Most people think schools are places where kids go, they sit in the desk and they receive instruction and they repeat it. And that's one part of it, instruction, direct instruction. But there's a lot of hidden things that are happening, not only in classrooms, but also in the lives of our students and their families. So one of the real major initiatives at the County Office of Education right now is the United for Youth. The United for Youth initiative, which is around behavioral health and mental health and children's mental health, because we can do all of the things and create the best programs, the best academic programs, the best reading program, the best math program that we want. But if a student is showing up and they are dealing with maybe an unaddressed trauma, or their family is going through, let's say for the recent immigration increased enforcement, they're coming worried about whether their parents are going to be able to pick them up. Those are things that a kid can't learn in a situation where they're facing those kinds of challenges. And so what United for Youth looks at is... what are those challenges the students are facing, and how do we create the conditions where we can assess their mental health state and then connect them with providers, and also think about what are the preventative measures that we do to overall maintain youth mental health overall.
Right.
Another key piece of that is, as we start to identify all of these things that are going into how a student shows up to school, how are we going to receive that once we know that? So if a student has identified, you know, I'm really dealing with these things at home right now, and that's super heavy, your teachers and your educators and your classroom aides, your front office assistants, they are the first responders to this. Mm-hmm. We think of first responders as, you know, police, fire, and that's a really, really important thing. If you're a child, your first responder is probably someone in the schoolhouse. And so how are we equipping our educators to be able to receive this information and then connect them with the resources they need? That's an important thing for us. And so we're also looking at providing resources for mental health in the schools, because we know that kids are carrying a lot right now. And not only the kids, but their families are carrying a lot. And so even though a kid might not be directly experiencing that stress or trauma, there can be secondary trauma based on what they're seeing happening in their homes or in their communities, because in many ways we're experiencing a community trauma right now as well. Right. So schools are looking at that, not because we want to be healthcare providers, but healthcare is connected to education. Transportation is connected to education. Everything is connected to education, because a child that shows up not feeling safe and supported just can't learn in those conditions. So how do we make sure that they're showing up their best selves and that they feel that they're supported all around so that they can engage with the amazing programs that our teachers and school educators are creating for them?
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And in terms of kind of the approaches to that, if you were to bucket it into systemic changes and supportive programs and things like that, like, are there particular areas of opportunity that you feel can have a big benefit on students, especially, as you said, now, like, we're kind of yet again going through some collective trauma wherever people are on the political spectrum? It's not about that as much as it is the rising tension and stress that even adults are feeling. That does not many things trickle down, but stress sure does. Right.
So one of the things that could be really helpful is a really easy lesson on what we're talking about when parents have new babies. We tell them to do three things: read, talk, sing. Mm-hmm. Read, talk, sing, read, talk, sing. If you're doing those things when your kids are first still on their way, let alone once they're born, you're gonna already create the conditions for that child to thrive. That, I would pull that even into 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 17-year-olds. Think about it. Read, talk, sing. When you're doing those things as a family or as a community, it creates an opportunity to engage in an authentic way so that all of that noise can be quieted, because you know you have a grounding with the people that are around you.
Yeah.
And now your people that are around you, you can combine with the rest of your community. And now we have community buy-in and community building. That happens around talking to each other and about hearing music and experiencing the arts and just engaging with each other face to face, as opposed to from a device to a device, which is also an issue. But I think that just creating those conditions where people can engage with each other in very healthy ways, we can do more in that area.
Yeah. And I think a bit of hope that you give us here is that there are things, I think, is sometimes, especially, pretty much in any field that you're in of public service, it be it healthcare or education or environment or whatnot, it's really easy to feel really down about what's, especially, what's happening at the moment for many of us. However, to feel like there are things that we can all do to create that sense of community, to read, talk, and sing, however that looks like, be it if you're a volunteer with senior co-siders and you're reading and talking and singing with seniors, or you're doing that with the Coastside Mothers Club, or you're doing that with one of our PTOs or with the Boys and Girls Club, or just with your friends.
Yep.
Right? And finding that sense of community with whoever it is, whoever you choose to find that sense of community with, that's something that can help us, bring that temperature down that we've been seeing increasing, that kind of fever.
Because remember, children are watching. They're always watching. So if you are only engaged in your phone and you're not engaging with your children, they're watching and they're learning their habits. But if they're seeing you out in the community and doing community service and talking to your neighbors and going on walks, they see that too. And they learn that these are the things that can bring them joy beyond all those temptations that exist beyond their screen. We have to be the models of what we want for our children. And it does take a little bit of introspection to really figure out, how am I contributing to the challenges we're facing, but also how can I contribute to the immense hope that children bring?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Hector.
Oh, thank
you. It's such a pleasure always to speak with you, to chat
Likewise.
With you and catch up on what's going on. And, you know, true to that, it's been a pleasure to chat with you today and walk around town a bit too and get a little exercise.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's beautiful here on the coast side and I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. On Location Coastside Edition with Sophia Lane is produced by Bright Now Media. Stay tuned for our next episode coming soon, and thanks for listening.